Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, need a little help. Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all.
Gotta change the world. What it used to be. Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone.
Need some help, yeah. Need some help, yeah.
Stop lying.
it don't matter. Yeah. What race, creed or color, everybody, we need each other. Wake up, everybody. Well, see, we need, wake up, everybody. We
come
need,
wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in there. No more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead. Wake up, all you teachers. Start to teach a new way. They're the ones that suffer each and every day. Teach the children.
Teach the baby.
Teach the baby.
Teach the children.
All right. Wake up, everybody. No more backwards thinking. Times of thinking ahead. That song just really motivates me because if we don't do anything, no more backwards thinking, times of thinking ahead. We all need each other. We all have to stick together. That song says so much and has so many things in it that just keep me motivated. Welcome. Welcome, listeners, all around this beautiful world. And, I'm just happy and glad you chose to tune in to bring back the family, focusing on the youth. If we don't help our youth now, we will be victims of not helping later. Keep that in mind. If we don't help our youth now, we will be victims of not helping later. Okay? So first, we want to acknowledge God's word with the scripture and prayer. And I will be reading for you here in Romans 12:1-13, a living sacrifice to God, a living sacrifice to God. And it says, and so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behaviors and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Because of the privilege and authority God has given me, I give each of you this warning. So don't think we are better than we really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. Just as our bodies have many parts and each part has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body and we all belong to each other. In his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you are a teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift for showing kindness to others, do it gladly. Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. And love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Rejoice in our confident hope. Be patient in trouble and keep on praying. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. That sounds like a good way to be. I like that. That's my favorite scripture. May the Lord add a blessing to the readers, hearers, and doers of his great and mighty word. let us pray. Okay, let us pray. Lord God, we just thank you for this day. We just thank you for our life, our love, fellowship, and friendship. We thank you for the Avenue of Blog Talk Radio and the Bring Back the Family. God, we pray that you will use us and this venue to help us learn how we really can bring back the family in the manner that you mean for families to operate. Lord God, please let Bring Back the Family provide a way to help our children do what it is you have for them to do. We are your children, Lord. Please help our parents to give us what we need to make it in this world. Help the parents. And Lord, we know that the things we need the most is more of you. Father God, you have a day that Bring Back the Family, concentrate on you. If your word says that when children are brought up knowing your ways, when they are old, they will not depart from you, then the opposite is surely true. So we start this discussion so reminded that if young people are not be raised knowing you, not rooted in you, and not guided in your righteousness, we will be victims later on for not helping. And so we ask your blessings this afternoon on all who will speak, and to them that are listening, let your glory come forth in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. All right. So I always talk about that song, Wake Up Everybody. And wake up, waking up is saying just it's a call for people to wake up, to get engaged, and to make a difference. It talks about war, hatred and poverty, challenges that have been with us since the beginning of time, calling for reform and change, awareness and hope and accountability. So whose responsibility is it? And what are we going to make up in our minds to do? And who is willing to sacrifice and roll up their sleeves and get busy helping and supporting our youth? How that sound? Block by block, we all can do something. We all could do something in our block to help our youth where help is needed. We know what we received. We know what we had growing up. So we could take what we had and just share it with them, because we do have a lot of memories and a lot of things that we were given that we could share with the youth. And we always talk about those things that, back in the day we had this and back in the day we had that. And lots of support, and we did. We had lots of support. So those are some of the things that we can give the youth. We can share with them just on our block, sharing love, sharing hugs, sharing concern, you know, giving them a book, doing something on their block or something that we thought that we didn't get. Hey, give it to them so that they could be better and make this the next generation to be ready for what they need to do. Okay, because we see what's going on right before our eyes all over the world. And I don't think it's getting any better. You know, we're all affected by what we see. We're all affected. So Bring Back the Family is a show that is designed to bring awareness to what we need to do for our youth in order for them to be good, productive citizens so that our youth can contribute and be a contribution to society and others all around this beautiful world, you know, and all they need, my dad says, a good foundation, okay? They just need some help, and we're going to give them that help because somebody helped us. And, you know, who's going to be, you know, in charge of the next chapter? Our children, they're going to be in charge. They're going to be the ones passing the torch and running the race and doing great things. You know why? Because we prepared them. Yeah, we prepared them to do these things. You know, our parents did it for us. They were focused. They spent time, quality time, so that we, as young folk, wouldn't grow up and be a nuisance to the community. Okay, I don't know if we, you know, we don't want to have to worry about our children once they become adults and get out in the community. We don't want them to get out there and be terrorizing the community and just making a bad name for themselves and a bad name for the family. So this is the time, and that's what Bringing Back the Family is about, helping the youth. Giving them what we had, giving them more than what we had, so that they can pass that torch to their next generation, okay? Because they're going to grow up and they're going to be adults just like us. But what kind of adults are they going to be if we don't give them what they need to make it, okay? So today we're going to talk about the education system and our youth, the disparities in our school system. Is our public school system, is it really working for all our youth? Why is it so much disparities? What can we do to help bring some balance and fairness to our education system so that, you know, all children have the same and fair chance to be educated and be good, productive citizens? Okay? We have some, we're going to just kind of do like a round table, and we have some participants that's going to, you know, help us do that. And if you are going to participate, just press 1. And when we get started, I will open up your mic. Just press 1. And you want to be included in this roundtable because we all have had children in Detroit public schools and in schools. So bring what you have to the table to talk about it, you know, because you have different kinds of school settings. You have your public school system. You have homeschooling. You have private schooling. You have the suburban schools. And so we choose to put our kids in these different schools. So we want to know what is it that the public school is doing or not doing versus what, you know, the school you went to, the suburban schools, the home schools, what are they getting that they are able to elevate and go to the next level when they're out of school, once they've graduated, they go to the next level, and that we're seeing a lot of the inner city schools, Detroit public schools, the public schools that they just don't have what it takes to get to the next level. What is it? Is it something the school system is doing that's holding them back? Is it, what is it? You know, share with us what you know about that, because our kids are in school 6 to 8 hours a day. 6 to 8 hours a day, five days a week. Add that up. That's a lot of time, a lot of instruction time, and then all the years that they have to go. And so if they're not able to go to the next level after they graduate from that 12th grade year, what's going on? What's happening? What is it that they're not getting that other school systems are getting, and why? And why aren't we concerned? Why haven't we stopped? Because this has gone on for a long, long, long time. I mean, are we at the point where we have just given up hope, has given up on our kids to just think that they can't learn, that they're getting just what they're supposed to get? But we have to know that something is wrong because they're not able to go to the next level. Even for myself, when I graduated from high school, was trying to go to the next level of education, I found that I wasn't ready. Why wasn't I ready? I went to school every day, you know. And when I talk to kids now, and they're in like 6th and 7th grade, and they're going to the next level, and they don't even know certain things. They don't even know how to write a paper. They don't even know anything about, you know, the English language. And it's very, very disturbing. So, like I said, have we given up? Have it gotten too far out of hand that we think that we can't get a handle on this? You know, because I know if I see it, everybody else see it. And so it has to be something that's happening that, you know, it might be happening on purpose or not. What, you know, so share with me. Let's talk about this so that we can, you know, just see how we can help just so that we don't give up hope and that we don't give up and just keep letting this go on and on and on, whereas we can start to do something about it and even just bring more awareness to it. You know, if we could just bring more awareness to what is going on and see what the differences is, you know. Why do they take the kids out of public school? What is it in the inner city and the public schools that is failing our kids? What is it? So let's talk about that. So who do we have? And I had quite a few that wanted to come on that I asked to come on. We have asked Jackie Conley. Now, if you're out there and you want to press one, Jacqueline Vandegrift, Callie Clyburn, Sarah McClendon, and anybody else that want to be with on this roundtable discussion, okay? All right, who do we have? Looks like we have, hello, you're on, that's you, Miss Vandegrift, Jacqueline. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Welcome to
Bring
Back to Family. Good. Am
Thank
I coming
you.
In clearly?
Yes, you are.
Oh, good, good, good deal. Okay, how you doing today? Thanks for coming on Bring Back the Family and sharing.
Well, thank
I know
you.
That you are, yeah, I know that you are heavy in education and, you know, think that is very important and, you know, put time in to make sure that kids get what they need to make it. So what is it? What can you share with us that's going on in the education system that our kids are not getting to be, you know, where they need to be going to the next level?
Well, you know, one of the things is that we think we are on a equal playing field. And truly speaking, we're not. Because it's not everybody has a curriculum. But if you notice that in some of your schools, they don't give books out anymore. They'll run copies of the assignment, and they'll pass it out to everybody and ask them to have little slips to put it inside their folders. They don't actually have holding the book anymore. And one of the things that we used to teach our children and also ourselves, read 20 minutes a day because it stimulates the mind. And see, one of the things that because my nephew was in public school, started out at the Mark Twain, but he had a teacher in kindergarten that actually stimulated their brain. And one of the things she taught every parent, instead of turning the radio on in the morning, in the morning you heard doing word games in the car with stimulating their minds before they get to school. You pass a building or you do the for the alphabets. What words can you come up with? And they would go around, everybody in the car would, it's like a competition. But see, there to me is a secret in the school system. Now, yes, they are striving on because of it's a business. The more kids they have, the more money they make. The more kids graduate, the percentage of graduation, the more that school stands out. But when that child gets to college, a high percentage don't finish. And we want to know why, because I noticed that when my nephew was going to homeschool, which it stemmed out of Grand Rapids, which was 99% Caucasians, they taught a different way. Every day, they used the acronym called RACE, not to offend anybody. Every time you write, you restate your question. You answer your question. You cite where you received it from, and then you explain it. They didn't care if it was a math question, a word math word problem. You had to use the same technique. If you was in science and you answered a science question, you had to use the same technique. So that child, when they get their paper, they explain everything. So automatically they're going to get an A. So now when they're taking state tests, they're using the same mindset, whether they have to check off a problem or a multiple choice or what. They take that problem and they write it out real quick and look at the scenario. Then they go back and they look at the answer, and that's how they select the right one. So our children are taught from a curriculum that has been put in place, but they're not taught how to play the game. Now, that's using the same acronyms. I was sitting here thinking, and it's been about a week, and I hear in the church it says, your vision must, write your vision down and make it clear.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked at an old vision board I had, okay? And I did everything I was supposed to do on that vision board, made it clear. It was stated, it had the pictures, it had the business side, it had the spiritual side, the business side, the family side, your expectation side. But when we go back in the Bible, it says faith without action is dead. So that vision board without action was dead. So now my mind said, oh, you need an action board. So that's something that we have to take that and take it to our children. And it's 180 school days in a year. We got to divide that down the middle for the first half and the second half. So now we got to teach them how to calculate how much time they're going to put in there in order to be self-sufficient and independent. Because when you get to the university, you have paid for it in advance, and the professor don't care if you learn or not. So our children fall behind because they don't know the secret to the system. And that was one of the things that I learned. But another thing, one of the teachers that was at Mark Twain taught the little second graders how to use science in everything. So if you are reading, if you're reading 20 minutes a day, they take the science and the mathematics, which is also a science, and they calculate how many minutes you're reading a year. So you see how the brain is stimulated?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to break it down of how we reward ourselves for, so the children don't get bored. So we show them how we reward you for a satisfactory of completing your action board. And if they take that with them through every semester, we will have scholars. Because we're teaching them how to be focused. And then when they get to college, that it won't be a culture shock for them. Do that kind of make sense?
So is the action board being used in the school system?
It's not being used in the school
system.
The vision board. Well, you know what? Some classes might say, well, let's have a vision board of what you want to be when you grow up. Let's put a board together. I have seen that. But in the homes, we need to teach our children how to have a vision board, but also have an action board. And they could have a vision board pertaining to what they want to do when they're in their education. Well, if you like the nicer things in life, and you want to spend this type of money for tennis shoes or whatever all these kids are buying, well, then your income must match that. So now let's look at a curriculum that pays the kind of money that for you to satisfy those needs. So on your vision board and your action board, that means that we got to have in their minds, we got to say, okay, well, if you want to be a scientist and let's say that I think a nurse physician or something, $200,000 a year. So we're just thinking on, and we're saying to them, okay, in order for you to make that kind of income, this is the curriculum path that you can go through. But you have to make sure you get to that one. So that's how that action board for them in school would be, for them to reach benchmarks and milestones. And when you reach it, it's time to celebrate. Do that make sense?
Yeah. They have their own. Okay.
I hope I
like that.
I said, I hope I was a help to somebody.
That was really great. That really was. Okay, let me stay on. We're going to get somebody else in this round table. 8771.
Hey, Kathy, it's Sarah.
Bring back the family. Oh, hi, Sarah. Hi.
How are you?
I recognize that number all the way. I'm fine. Did you hear what Ms. Vandergriff just said, spoke of? That was really powerful. I want to hear more about that race, how they do that acronym with the race. I'm going to have to get some more notes on that.
I missed the acronym, and I'm excited too, so she probably could repeat it if she can. But I did catch the last part, and I'm super, super an advocate for vision boards and stuff. I'm actually going back into the classroom this year, and that was one of my goals is that we're going to make vision boards and do stuff like that. And it made me excited because I was going to ask that one of the disparities in education is just the love in general, just treating the kids as though they're yours. And then you get a break, leadership, just self-care all the way around. I studied something called restorative practices for a while, and I know I've talked about it before. But that really changed my perspective as an educator, as a parent, as a student in general. I use it with students. And so I would encourage people to get into that. One of the things that the restorative practices does encourage is vision boards and making it plain in front of you so that you can have a plan. And with my daughters, they're 6 and 8, and I want to do one right now. So I definitely encourage those. I definitely want to thank her for openly saying that because there are ways educational leaders have figured out that they have done things. They haven't figured out everything, but they've come to the realization that some things are not correct. And so I thank God every day that I got into social emotional learning so that I can come out here and even just suggest things. I just pray that, you know, it spreads. And so I would even add that there's just not enough social emotional learning in schools. It's really come get your work done and take the test and leave. It's not, you know, how's your day? And kids are really going through things. Kids were going through things before, you know, all the COVID and everything, and kids are going through things now. And so one of my intentions as an educator is I always try to make it self-aware. I take social-emotional wellness very seriously, and it's one of the things that has actually saved my life in general. And so to be able to teach it to kids and give those tools is impeccable. However, it's hard in a regular educational setting because you have to meet so many other quote-unquote standards. And so I think that with that being said, another disparity would be just understanding, you know, your culture and understanding, you know, where people are. one of my old schools I worked at, something really, really tragic happened, and they didn't understand that my leaders mm-hmm. didn't really get it at the time, that it affected the whole classroom. It wasn't just a him versus her situation. It was the whole classroom that was involved because of things happened outside and things of that nature. But, yeah, just the social-emotional wellness, I'm a big advocate for that, and just being there and understanding where the kid is coming from. Sometimes children feel like that they're by themselves in schools, and some kids, the system is set up to fail, and they're the kids that are going to fail. And so those are the children mm-hmm. that I intentionally try to get my hands on and try to figure out some different stuff, because some children won't go to college. Some kids won't even graduate high school. How can they still make it in this world? Like, we're going to still encounter them as citizens. So how do you create mm-hmm. them to be the best citizens as possible? And so the vision board, you can see where a child is at. You can see where your child is at. You can see where yourself is at. It's a very good visual tool to generate, you know, some good educational wealth. I love it, though. I love vision board. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the cost of a vision board? How do you make it? What is it? What is all involved in it? Is it like a science project board?
It could be. Most people just use like a poster board, though. I don't want to take this. But I'm collecting magazines, not Kathy, just to let you know. So I'll be letting you know.
Okay. Is that part of the vision board?
Yeah.
Creating the vision board?
Usually, like, I don't want to take too much of her time with the vision board thing, but my experience with a vision board, your goals, what you want to conquer, mm-hmm. fears that you might want to conquer, things that you want to accomplish, or things that you've done that you want to remind yourself that you've done. Anything that makes you, I would say, more self-aware to where you want to be, mm-hmm. where you are, and where you should be. And you can use mm-hmm. magazines. You can cut up construction paper, sticky notes. Mm-hmm. Any, you can use anything.
That's a good activity.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. Okay, so anybody else that's participating, press 1 so that I know that you are there and that you're ready to participate. Okay, let me go to 6695. Hello, you're on Bring Back the Family.
Hello, Kathy. How are you doing?
Good.
Wonderful. Just sitting here listening. While I was sitting here listening to the other two conversations, I thought about how the education system responds to special needs or physically challenged adults and children. If you respond to a person with autism in the wrong way, That particular person won't know how to respond back. I'll give you an example. I am around a lot of adults with physical challenges. And some of them have verbal challenges, and it takes them a minute to process what the teacher is saying to them. So, say if a teacher asks an autistic person to clean up after they're done. They are going to do it, but they need a minute to process what you ask them to do. And like I said on the radio yesterday, if you respond to a autistic person with a negative attitude, that negative energy that's on you will automatically come out in their personality, So the education system has to respond better, has to respond more positively to the people with special needs, because I have physical challenges, and even though I'm verbal, it takes me a minute to process what you are saying to me. It takes me a minute to get my muscles going to be able to do the task that you asked me to do. See, I don't like when I see people on the news beating autistic or physically challenged people, because that means that an autistic person can't respond well to what you're doing to them. And whether you know it or not, what you're doing to them is you're affecting their ability to respond to you in a positive way. So that as far as the education system, our education system has to do better with their response to physically challenged people. And that's why a lot of these parents are, a lot of the parents of physically challenged people are pulling their kids out of these schools because of how the teachers or the aides respond to their needs.
Then where would they go?
But you say then where would they go?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is the teachers. Go ahead, Kat.
No, you were saying that they didn't understand and wasn't able to help them with their special needs, so the parents would pull them out.
I see a lot of people pulling their special needs children out of schools because of the way that the teachers respond to their needs. What I'm saying is, our education system has to have a better attitude towards our physically challenged people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we were put here for a special reason. All the people that are physically challenged were put here for a special reason. And you don't want them to give up on the dreams that they have for their lives because of the attitude that they see coming from our teachers.
Mm. That's true.
And I said it.
They should be treated fairly as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I said it earlier yesterday. Attitude has power. And if a special needs teacher has a negative attitude towards a special needs adult or child, that child is going to grab that energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That adult or that child is going to get discouraged and not want to fulfill their dreams.
Right.
So,
right.
I guess what I'm saying is we have to have a different view of a special needs society because we were put here for a special reason, and only God knows what that reason is or is going to be. We don't know what His reason for putting special needs people on this earth is.
And they can learn too. They can learn too, because I mean, you are a pastor, and you speak very well, very educated, and so you were able to get your education, even though you know you're in a wheelchair and you have a disability, and that's great.
And you know what? I'm not bragging, but I had the opportunity to graduate twice. From two different schools.
Wow.
And that was nobody but Jesus, because Jesus was the one who told me, He said, don't give up on your dream because of what people say about you.
All right now. Beautiful. That's a good story. I'm sure all of that is going to be in that book that you're writing.
Yeah. Oh, you know it will.
I'm sure. I can't wait to read it. I'm sure some of our callers might have some questions for you. So don't hang up. Stand by. We got another caller that wants to say something.
Oh, I'm here.
Anybody want to say something, just jump in and all the mics are open. You can just jump in and have your way. Okay, 9744. Hello, you're on with Bring Back the Family.
Hello. My name is Jesus. I'm a sophomore in high school, and me and my brother was just gonna talk about like what schools need for like them to survive when they get out of school. But the suggestions I wanted to make about high school is for people to, like, for them to teach, like, real-world stuff, like how to book flights or how to buy houses, like, because they don't teach that stuff in school. And, they mainly just teach the standards. Like, it's always just science, math, social studies, and it's never, like, real-world situations, because once you get out of high school, because some people don't go to college, so once you get out of high school, you on your own, and you got to know how to pay your bills, politics, got to know how to vote, got to know how to do everything. So I would just suggest, like, maybe they should add classes to teach the students, add classes to the high school for students to learn that kind of stuff.
Wow.
And also,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also, they need to start telling them. So this is specifically probably for history class, because people need to know about, like, what's happening in the real world. Because mm-hmm. they don't do that much no more, because they used to back in middle school, or probably only for me, but back in middle school, they used to tell us, like, what's going on in the real world. Because, like, stuff that's happening in the real world could be history to people, the next generation from now could be their history. Because coronavirus is going to be history for the next generation. So.
right.
All right, just suggestion,
yeah,
like.
You're right.
what's going on in the real world and stuff, so people can be aware. And, like, because some, they might come out with, like, it might be on the news, like, the president. For example, the president could, like, make a whole new law. Most of these kids, they don't be paying attention to no news at all or doing none of that stuff. And it'll be, like, the president can, it'll be something real serious. And then mm-hmm. they'll grow up and they'll have no idea about it because they're not getting updated mm-hmm. about it because they don't really pay attention to that stuff. But.
Like politics, but yeah. They're not paying attention to it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
What's your name?
Exactly. My name is Genesis Conley.
Oh,
I'm
a sophomore
in high school.
Okay. Oh, sophomore. What school do you go to?
I go to Thurston, Redford, Michigan.
Okay. Is it a good school?
Yeah, it's a pretty good school.
Or you just saying that? Okay.
Yeah.
So you're saying, so do they too need to bring things, what's happening into the real world as far as there? You say you're in 10th grade?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are
they
doing?
They need to add mm-hmm. some of that stuff to my school too, and other schools too, because some of these schools out here, I know, like, I've been to previous schools, like, I heard they don't have a good education. Like, some of these schools don't be getting the cool education that they need and stuff, but. My school is pretty. It's good. It's up to state. Everything, the education
it's
is good. They teach, and they got varieties of classes. They should add more classes, like for more schools too. Because some of these schools I noticed don't got that much classes. Like, they don't have much electives or other curriculums besides just the regular standards.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you to say like carpentry? I know we used to have wood shop and things like that. So you talking about that?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Give
yeah.
you a skill before you leave school. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. Exactly.
That's great.
Well, my little brother.
Mm-hmm. Glad you. Okay, put them on. Yeah, they're telling us what they need.
Hi, nice to meet you. My name is Jamara Lucas. I am 10 years old, and I am in fifth grade. And I think that people that just got out of school on summer break, I feel like people that just got on summer break, they think, like, summer break is just all about, like, fun. But me, I think mm-hmm. that summer break is to get prepared to go to the next grade. So that's like, and it's like a homeschool. You can still have fun in summer break, but I think you still need to like do like learn more and stuff while you're in summer break, because my school doesn't teach, they teach us a lot, but they don't teach us like the stuff that needs to be taught. Like, they teach us math and stuff, but they don't teach us like real world stuff. Like my brother said, he said that they need to teach more about like what's going around about the world and stuff. And that's what my school needs to teach too, because it's more stuff around the world that is importanter than the math and stuff. And reading is also good, because if you know how to read, then you know how to write. And writing is important because if you write, then you get to have, like, a good job. Because my grandma always told me to stay in school and, like, always pay attention, because if I get, like, a good record, then I will get a good job, and then I'll have a good girlfriend and stuff like that. So my grandma always told me to always focus on school and, like, never give up on what I want to accomplish and stuff like that.
Wow. You are amazing. Give them some feedback. You are amazing, young man. 10 years old in the fifth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And who's your grandma? It is amazing. Huh? Who's your grandma?
My grandma is Jackie Lacalle.
She's amazing. Yeah, and she told you just right. That is great. So we need more real-world things in school for the kids to do. Have you told your teachers that and your principal those things? Have you shared that with them, your teachers and principal?
I share some of the stuff to them, but like I feel like if I share more to like the world and stuff, maybe more people will understand and more people will like tell more people about like the world instead of doing like having fun, because the world isn't just about having fun. The world is like you have to be successful to have fun.
That's true. Right, because if you don't have what you need, if you have no job, you have no money, you won't be having no fun. That's for sure. That is great. Anybody have anything to say? What's your name, 10-year-old?
My name is Jeremiah Lucas.
Javon?
Jeremiah.
Oh, Jeremiah. Okay. Anybody have anything for Jeremiah? He is
like
an amazing young man. Okay, go for it.
Yes, he's very articulate. I really like that. I like to know what books has he read on his own. Does his mother encourage him to read books on his own? And what are some of his favorite subjects for both young men?
Okay. So the favorite books that I like to read in like my free time, it's Harry Potter. I'm like a big fan of Harry Potter. Because Harry Potter was the first I read, and that was when I was 5 years old. And then I just kept reading Harry Potter, and then I switch it up sometimes. And after I start like reading, when I felt the connection to reading, That was my favorite subject in school. So I pay attention to, like, all the subjects the same, but reading is, like, the subject that I will always, like, understand the most.
I like you.
Okay.
Yeah. That is great.
And what about you?
And what about you, a young man? What books does he like to read since he's in high school?
What books does my brother like to read?
Yeah.
Oh, let me get in the shit.
Wow, this is amazing.
They want to know what books you like to read.
I like to read, the books I like to read is mainly non-fictional because they're more interesting,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. They make it more interesting. And I don't read some other books too, but I like to mainly read books that's about action, like not something that's too, like, too boring, like something that fits my like my likings. So mainly it would be some like a couple Harry Potter books. I read a couple of those. Those is pretty good. It's some big stack books. They're like real thick, but it's a whole sequel. And I was trying to finish it, but I couldn't finish it because my school didn't have all the books.
Wow.
But yeah, the Harry Potter books is good. I didn't read some more books about other stuff. Like, it was this one book that I read, and it was pretty good. It was about this boy. He could turn into a wolf, but it was real good. He could turn into a wolf, and he was fighting this dude and sneaking around and stuff. But it was good. Like, I kept up with it, read at least. When I do read, I read at least, 3 to 4 chapters. If it's really interesting, then I'll read three to four chapters, then I leave, then pick up back on it later on. But.
Mm-hmm. So, young man, you ever go to the library and purchase some of the books? Because libraries sell their books for like $1 or $2, and like to start your own library. And it's like they have good authors that like, for instance, for the older young men, like James Patterson, he has series books, and they're fiction books, but they're always dealing with crime. He's like they deal with crimes, and it's all fiction, but they're fast reading books. And sometimes the chapters are only like 2 or 3 pages long, and they, and because of a sequel, because it really can keep your interest if you look for a book that could read, that you read just for enjoyment. So, you know, you can actually go to any library in any city, because they sell the books. That way you can start your own personal library.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
What do you want to study? Are you going to go to college?
Yes, I ain't even think about going to college. I have to figure out what for, though. I might take the long years and become a scientist. I'm thinking about it. Because I think if I really sit down and study for these college years and my last 2 years of high school, then I don't think I can do it.
Mm-hmm. You have a plan. That is great.
Okay. Well, thanks. I'm going to have you guys come on again sometime. We're going to have a kid show, a young folks show. So that is great. You really just got me just really overwhelmed and happy over here, just hearing you guys being able to communicate what it is that you need. Yeah, and we want to make sure you have what you need to make it in this world so you can be good, productive citizens. It sounds like you guys are on your way.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Brad. All right, we heard it from the, we,
We heard it from the young folks, a 10-year-old and a 10th grader. That is great. Okay. So, wow. Ms. Conley, are you on the line? Would you like to have this? Say a word or two. Let me see. These kids, they got me all off track now. It's like they really want my heart.
I like to say that. I like to say that Mrs. Conley has always stressed education. She has produced a doctor, a surgeon, and so her other daughter has also been interested in starting her own business. And I do remember another one of her granddaughters. She's already like about 20 years old. I remember my granddaughter reading whole books at like I think about 3 or 4 years old. She was able to just love books, and she was just reading. It was unreal. So you know, teaching your child to read, and children really love books, and they have books. I'm not really sure, but I know back in the day, the Uncle Bill used to come around, and we'd be able to pick up books from the little trailer-like thing. And I'm sure they still have a book, you know, but in some of these schools, they're shying away with the hardcover books because I guess it's too expensive to give every child a book. And I don't know how the students prepare book reports about the actual books, but they do it, because I saw one young man do a term paper just by pulling information off the computer, off the internet. But I'm still a hands-on person. I like the book. I like the feel of a book. And so, but yes, I do know his grandmother is very, and their grandfather was very pro-education.
I know Miss Jackie Vandegrift was talking about how they print off the books on paper and give it to the kids so that they can read, that they're hands off on the books now. And that's not really good, in my opinion. What do you think? Because like you said, hands on as far as books and writing books, reports and things like that. And then it's teaching them not to even read or even want to have a book.
Right. I don't agree with it, but that's the way of the world right now. On one end, they're trying to save the trees by not having paper, but at the same time, they're encouraging the destruction of trees by having you print out the whole book. The only good thing I can see about the printing out the book is that you can actually maybe write and keep notes on those pieces of paper. But I just think that the books, a book is just better. You can write your own notes. And I'm just, like I said, we're just in a different era where I don't know how, I can't even imagine trying to do a book report on something that is run off the computer. I'm just so used to having a book. But this is the way they're training the young people. And also just the same thing with, you know, ink pens and paper. They don't keep notes. I don't know how they do it. I guess do a lot of cut and pasting, but it's like I think one of the other callers was saying how when you write things down, sometimes it helps you to memorize what you learn. And so if you're constantly cutting and pasting, you're not really retaining what you may have learned. I'm that type of person where once I write it down, well, then I have it. I said, there's a different way of teaching right now. I guess us older folks, when we have grandchildren, I think that if we can incorporate some of the new with the old, I think they have a good rate of success.
Yeah, but if that's what they're teaching our kids that way, 6 to 8 hours a day, that's what they're going to do. But I don't see how they take all that time to print off from a book. That's a lot of time wasted printing pages out of a book. That's a lot of time that's being wasted where they could just give them the book and let them, you know, study from it.
The child has to have enough ink and paper to print all that off. That's another thing.
Are they responsible for printing it off, or are the teachers responsible for printing it off? Is this something that they're doing in school? Or,
well, in college, you have to do your own printing. I do know that. Okay, you go to
lab. I'm talking about for 0 through 8th grade. You know, like elementary and middle school. So, who's responsible for doing it for them?
I'm not sure, I do know down in the South, my grandson, he'll bring home like a workbook, and they don't really write in those workbooks, but I do believe they keep them in the end, especially for the science and the math. And I thought that was sort of silly. The workbook is just something they're going to keep. They should be writing in that, but the teachers at the same time runs off the assignment on regular paper.
So they just keep the book.
Everyone's different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. So is that the way they do it in the suburbs? Is that what they do, or do they have actual books? Or is this how it's being done across the board? Or other schools, in other schools and other communities. Is that how they do it outside of the inner city, public school?
Well, I can't really say now since I don't have any children in public schools. You know, you probably would have to ask the young man who just left off the phone. I'm not sure if he's in school in the city or in the suburbs, but I can't honestly tell you if they're giving them books in the suburbs and paper in the city. I'm not really sure.
Okay. Let me see. Do we still have you on, Jameson?
This is Jackie.
Okay. Hi,
Jackie. I'm here.
How you doing?
Uh-huh. Hi.
How you doing? Great work.
I'm good.
Oh, you're good.
Am I on there?
Yes, you are. So intelligent. Uh-huh. Yes, you are.
Kathy, I just want to say that this is a wonderful program today. You know, you're in my house when you talk education. You're in my living room. And I tell you, so much was said through your callers that speaks to education. And for one, the pastor caller that talked about the patience that is needed when one calls themselves a teacher and you want to disseminate information to your students, you have to know how to reach that student. And when he spoke about the challenges that a lot of our children are facing nowadays, not only physical, the mental, the social, oh my gosh, the sexual challenge, the home challenges, the environment, they are inundated with challenges. So how does a teacher break through all of those veneers of barriers and problems and walls that they have that's blocking the brain receptors? And so a good teacher has to know how to individually zero in on each one of her students. And I'm telling you, that in itself is a challenge. And another thing I want to talk about, when you mentioned those books that students are no longer being privileged to carry, because I consider it a privilege. I can remember back in the day when we had to bring home books, especially in junior high school and high school. Do you know the education that's involved with bringing home a textbook? First of all, you've got a cover to that book, illustrations on that cover, the beautiful artwork that's there, that's stimulating. Then you have the weight of the book that you got to carry. And when you've got 2 and 3 and 4 books, because the higher grades you go, of course, back then, the more books you had to carry. You had to figure out, how do I carry all of these books? That's gravity. That's science. And I think one of your callers mentioned that science is in everything. And so when you remove that aspect of learning from students and you give them a single sheet of paper, that does not promote education. It's so much missing from that component of learning, because I can remember books. You know, sometimes we used to get excited about the number of books that we had to carry, believe it or not, you know, things like that. And it also slows you down from being able to trouble, because you are so weightless, you can run here, run there, and do this and that. Whereas if you've got 3 or 4 textbooks in your book bag, you'd have to take yourself home and unload that package, first of all. So education and the youth and the teachers and the whole school setting, all of it, the home environment, the parents, when you educate a child, you must educate the whole child. It's not about science, math, reading only. It's about the whole child. What is involved in educating this child? Like my grandson spoke earlier, the environment that these young people are living in, what's going on in their environment? Half of them don't even know about what's going on outside of them. Where are the bugs? Where are the butterflies? Where are the worms? Have any of them ever touched those kinds of things? We did. Have they played in the dirt? Do you guys remember when we had mud under the surface of the ground? We played with mud. They don't know about these things. The kinetics of learning, when you feel things and touch things. My youngest grandson, the second to the youngest, he is so funny because he's afraid of everything that's outside of his house. And I tell him all the time, I said, baby, you're in their world now. When you step outside your door, you're in someone else's house. And guess what? It's a whole lot of creatures in this house. And you got to learn how to deal with them. That's education. Don't be fearful of all of this beauty that God has created around you. We don't even know the potential scientists, the potential environmentalists. Our environment is in such serious trouble. We need more students to be curious about that, and they'll never get it with a piece of paper. You know what I'm saying? Right. So I just wanted to make those couple of points, you know, but education is everything. When they wake up in the morning and talk about how they feel or want to talk about how they feel, is anyone there to hear them? Is anybody listening? But we have a big job to do, Kathy, and I just want to thank you for having this forum for young people and old people and current people and past people of different professions and whatnot, because we do have to continue to bring this topic to the forefront. We have to continue to talk about it, and we have to continue to seek solutions, current solutions, because this is a new day, and they have to be taught in a new way. The old ways of pencils and paper sometimes is not going to get it for these young people these days, because they're into technology. And so, you know, we've got to become creative in how we teach our students. We've got to become, I love what the pastor said about being patient. That is key. You have to be patient. Give them time to formulate their thoughts and bring them forward. And then when they do, don't be judgmental. As he pointed out, you know, talk about this. Give me some ideas. What are you feeling when you say this, or when you don't say this? What's on your heart? And this is what needs to happen. Students with students, and students with adults. I mean, we all have a lot to learn. And with what we see around us, there's a lot of work to be done. We've got to do something to make our children feel part of the solution to our society's ills that we're facing, all of these negative things that they're seeing every day. How do they stay positive? You know? So I can talk on and on, because I love education. But thank
I know.
You,
thank you. Thank you.
Thank
we need
you,
more
Kathy,
Jackie Connellys around here. We
continue
do.
Continue the good work, honey. Continue the good work. And if I could ever be of any help, I tell people now, I am old school because they teach a new way, but there's one way that never gets old, and it's just listening. That never gets
That's
old.
That's right.
Just sit and listen. So thank
and
you,
they
Kathy.
Need that.
Thank all of the callers.
You're welcome.
Yes, they do. Yes,
thank
they
you
do.
For
we
having good, productive children that are good citizens.
Well,
good productive citizens.
We do what we can. We try.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And look like those young men are on their way. Jemariah and Jemison. Love it.
Yes.
Thanks, Jackie. We need a whole lot of you around. We really do.
We're here.
Yeah.
You just have to recognize one another and be tolerant and patient and listen.
Yes.
That's
ma'am.
Why God gave
yep,
two
I
ears
a...
and one mouth.
Right. Listening to patience. I had another educator that wanted to be on, and she's going to come on another time from Hamtramck, and she said she's changing her profession, moving over to social work, because she said these kids really, they have a lot of problems after this pandemic thing, and they really need to have someone to talk to and express themselves, and just being, like you said, being patient with them and getting to know who they are and things like that. So she wants to come on and talk about that. So yeah, so we're going to have another education forum. So thanks, Jackie. Thank you so much. Okay. Anybody want to jump in? Everybody's mic is open. June Rogers, you have something you want to say, Miss Madam? Hello. Welcome to Bring Back the Family.
Thank you. I apologize that I missed quite a bit because I had to jump off, and then just now I had another call. There's a few things going on. But what I did think about early when the first caller or the first person in the round table was speaking, it was just so impressive listening to her and then listening to Jackie, and I apologize if that's the same person. But and then when you opened up the show, you brought up the whole concept of, you know, how did things get this way? Is it really that our kids not getting the type of education that they need? And then there was mention about, like, when they get to college, they're going to be paying for this. And so usually by the time they get to college, they have a concept of understanding that they're spending a lot of money. And so I need to pay attention because, you know, I'm paying for this. One of the things that we get on the college level as far as our training goes, a lot of those things that you bring up about being creative in teaching, but the big question that always comes up that we have to remember as educators in higher education, I also think is a question that needs to be put on the table for all educators, all of education, and here is the question. Who is responsible for the student's learning? And so we see ourselves as the coach. Ultimately, it's that student who's responsible for their learning. So, yeah, sure, they can come to class. They can memorize a whole lot of stuff. They could take a test, regurgitate the information, and then forget all of it. And then when it comes time for them to actually practice in the field, they may have forgot a lot of that stuff and be frustrated by the fact that, oh, shoot, I probably should have learned that stuff that I needed to learn. I paid for that, and it's my fault. But we put at the feet of that adult learner that they are responsible for their learning. And I believe that we all need to ask ourselves, whether we're parents, students, community leaders, taxpayers of education, who is responsible for the learning of our children? And I think the answer to that is all of us. And I think all of us need to stop, look ourselves in the mirror and say, well, what does that mean to me? You know, obviously what it means if you're an educator are all the things that we've been hearing. We need to be patient. We need to be creative. We need to do our part and make sure that when they show up at the table that there's food in the way of learning for them. We need to earn our pay. We need to do our jobs. We need to care. But at the same time, as was mentioned, on the way to school, you know, are you playing games with the kids? Are you stimulating their minds? What are you making sure that they're doing their homework? Are you helping them? Are you getting them tutoring if they need that? You know, that's the question the parent needs. What part of this responsibility do I bear? As a taxpayer, mm-hmm. I'm paying taxes in this town. What kind of test results is this education system, what do the test scores look like for the kids? How many of them are going to college? So I guess really if we would just all do our jobs, look in the mirror and say, what is my role? What is my responsibility? Who's responsible for these kids learning? The answer, I think, is all of us. And we can't do everything, but we can do our part. So that's really all I wanted to say.
Okay. Yeah, who is responsible? Yeah. Hmm? Go ahead. Anybody else want to comment?
I would like to comment also, Kathy. This is Jackie Vandergriff. First of all, I want to say, if Jackie Connelly is still on the phone, I love Jackie Connelly. Hey, sister.
two Jackies.
What I wanted to say to the pastor that was talking about disability, also don't forget about the people that has hidden disability. They are lost in the system because they don't have a physical disability, and sometimes they are overlooked because of this hidden disability. That's something that we need to be cautious about when we're dealing with people and how we react. And but he said the process of being able, how they process and how they deliver. We all process and we deliver differently. So, you know, don't forget the ones out there when you're speaking amongst people about the people with the hidden disabilities. Now, another question that came up was regarding the schools with the books. One thing about that homeschool from Grand Rapids, those are mostly, like I said, about 95% Caucasians. They send books. The only books they require back is hard books. They require you to send those back after the school year. But they have workbooks. They have books that they actually have their hands on, and they go through these books with these students every single day. They quiz them every day. But with the stipulations that they put on teachers in public schools and the amount of students in the classroom, it's hard to be able to get a handle on every student when you already have 30 kids in a classroom. It's hard for it, and that's something that as somebody spoke about the taxpayer and being a taxpayer, that's something that as taxpayers we need to lobby. Because our schools' classrooms do not need that many kids in a classroom. And a teacher cannot be effective have a great effect on a student or be effective in their teaching. That's why we can't say, we can say, because Hillary Clinton made a statement, it takes a village to raise a child. And that's when the educator spoke about parents need, and that's something that I paid for every week for my nephew to have a tutorer twice a week. It was expensive, but it was something that, the sacrifice was more important to me than for him not to understand what he had to learn. But the thing about it is that somebody else spoke about acronym rape. What it says is that the ARA was for restate the question. On the assignment, there's a question. They restate the question in their writing. Then they answer the question. But they cite where they get the information from to answer the question. They might have cited that they got the answer from the teacher, but they cite it, and then they explain why they had the answer. That's what the acronym was, and that was the difference of their writing versus just answering a question. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, but it was a very good show. I enjoyed everybody. I also the emotional side. I really appreciate when the young lady spoke about the emotional side is so mm-hmm. important to bring into the curriculum of a child or just us on a normal basis, because that's something that sometimes we have to get in their world and understand what are they saying, and not mm-hmm. as a don't be too proud to say, I apologize to you for not understanding you. Okay, that's it.
Well, thank you, Jackie. Did you go through the whole race, R-A-T-E?
I beg your pardon?
The acronym. Did you go through the whole acronym?
Yes, that's what I just did.
Okay, I'm sorry. Could you do it again?
Okay.
I love you. Okay.
Uh-huh. Acronym race came mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. the homeschool out of mm-hmm. Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
The acronym is race. R for mm-hmm. restating the question. If you have
okay.
a question
mm-hmm.
on the test, restate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you answer the question, but you cite where you got your answer from. It could have came out of a textbook. You put that wherever you got that answer from, that's where you
mm-hmm.
cite it. Then you explain
okay.
your answer in your opinion. That was the acronym, and they wanted them to do that with every subject that they work on. If you do that with every subject, not only does it train the mind, but it makes you remember.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, that was great. Because, I mean, what grade do they start them at with that?
Well, you know what? Because he didn't start at the beginning, but he learned that
mm-hmm.
in the fourth grade. Because he was writing, and she said, because you're new, I'm going to bring you up to speed. So they might have been teaching them at an earlier age. And she, because a parent or somebody had to be next to them the whole school hour, the hours of school. So you had to participate. So at that time, this is what she broke down to him, how she wanted him to answer all of his questions and the reason why. So I take it he started at an earlier age, but I did share that with some educators. So when they're
mm-hmm.
with teaching their kids, they could use that acronym and help them out.
Right. Excuse me,
okay,
Jackie. What was
that.
C again? What was C again in the acronym?
Cite. You know how you cite in your paper?
C-I-T-E.
You cite where you get your information from?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And E was explain.
Explain, yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Awesome. That's good, because that's what they do in college.
Yes.
They're getting a
yes.
head start. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. That's what I'm saying. It's a difference because when I talk to kids, you know, from public schools, they're just so far behind. And, oh, my God. Yeah. They're missing out on a lot. Okay. Yeah. It's a difference. So.
But you know what, Kathy?
Okay,
shows,
mm-hmm.
Let me say this. Shows mm-hmm. programs like you have.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could get every Sunday, if we could
mm-hmm.
get like Jackie had her grandkids on the show, if we could
mm-hmm.
get more young people bringing them on the show just to listen,
mm-hmm.
they would learn so much because you have had some great people that had
mm-hmm.
experience in college, how they weathered the storm, how they graduated, what they're doing with their life after graduation, because that's another
mm-hmm.
culture shock right there, if you don't know what to do with the piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And information, it should be some kind of way, even in the school system when school starts back, to in some of the classes, they need to make it part of their curriculum that the kids tune in and listen to your show, even if they have to write
mm-hmm.
an assignment behind it.
Wow,
and
good idea.
In one school and move on to another school.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's important that one, I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Ms. Jackie.
No, there was somebody else speaking.
No, that was me.
Oh. No, I said that if it starts off with one school, it'll take off
mm-hmm.
and they should be another school. But it needs to
mm-hmm.
be something that is connected with the curriculum because you have so much to offer them. And it helps them to be able, I think somebody had a statement earlier regarding, I think the young man had the statement saying that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you need to know how to book a flight,
mm-hmm.
make a reservation, or little things that we do every day, that we
right.
know how to do
mm-hmm.
those things. And that should be, a show like yours should be a part of the curriculum in the school system.
So it's up to us.
I said, just food for thought.
That's some good food. Yummy, yummy. And then, you know, it's very, very important that we share the information. When I send you out the information to tune into the show, send it to someone else. And then encourage them to listen and have their young people listen. And that's the way this will get going. And then, too, with what you shared with us today, then, like I said, block by block, we can do something on our block to help the youth that we're in contact with, that we see every day, that's struggling, you know, with something as far as education and getting to the next level. This is something that we could share with them, the race theory here with the acronym RACE. We could share that with them so we all know something more that we could share. And that's really, really good. And it'll help them understand what they're reading, and then they really know what it is that they have read. Yes, comprehension. Yeah, so we have to share everything that we learn and that we're doing here. We have to share it, send it out. If everybody send the flyer out to 10 people, then that's 10 more people each, you know, time listen. 10 times how many other people listening, that's more people listening. And just telling them about the show, and then you know, just adding to it and adding to it. And so, and then we'll get others that want to come in, and then we will get to hear more from our youth, yeah, and what they need. So that was good to see Jackie. She about kids and she about the education. So she put them on, let them be a part of this, you know, that public speaking and all of that. They're not afraid to get on and speak. So, yeah, they've been well trained. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Oh, let me see. I wanted to say something about, okay, so June was talking about each child or student being responsible for their own learning. Okay, so how do we motivate them to be responsible for their own learning? How do we do that? I know I was talking to my sister earlier today, and she was sharing with me when her son went from suburb schools, I think Woodhaven, he came to Detroit schools. Neatly, you want to share that? Neatly, I can't even remember her new last name. Miss Clyburn.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. I was telling them about when Lauren went from Woodhaven to Detroit Public and what that experience was. You want to share that?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a long time ago. I tell you, my stories are all history stories, okay? It's nothing as we said. But when I enrolled my son into the Woodhaven School District, he was always on the high end of the academic scale. And so he never had any issues with school because he was one of the children, I believe, when they first began the Head Start program. He was probably one of the original children in the Head Start program, okay, back when they began that program. Anyway, so he was always a good reader. He was always excellent in math, just a good all-around student, you know, participated in, you know, sports. And so in the, like, 10th grade, my father wanted him to attend Southwestern High School because of Perry Watson, his basketball program. And so my father disenrolled my son, which was very surprising to me, and enrolled him in Southwestern. And so I just said to my son, I said, listen, I know that the work in Detroit Public Schools is not on the same level as where you came from. Not that Woodhaven was all that, but it was just different teaching and whatnot. And so I told him I expected him. I said, if you bring home a B in any class, I'm disenrolling you. And I was serious. I said, because there's no way that you should not be making A's in all your classes at Southwestern because this stuff is going to be repeating. And he did that. He bought home. He had a 3.89 grade point average that first year at Southwestern. And but he told me, he said, the big difference in the two school districts, so he said everybody at Woodhaven was trying to get an A, 100%. He said, where went to Southwestern? He said, there was very little interest in trying to pass anything or try to get any high grades. This is why he, you know, excelled at Southwestern, because no one, you know, the teacher was so happy that they had someone who could do the work, analytical math. I remember him doing going this math class. He had analytical math, and one problem was almost 5 pages long. Listen, I would have stopped after I put the number one answer. I would have stopped at that point because I wouldn't have been able to go no further. Okay, I probably just read the question like Jackie said, race. I would have recited the problem, and then there wouldn't have been an answer. So he said that was the only thing. He said that the children, that the students, they did not try. He said where he was competing against everyone trying to get the highest grade in class in Woodhaven and in Southwestern or Detroit. He said that was not, he said that was not the case. No one really cared.
So I don't think that's okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And that's what he told me. That's what he saw. That there was no competition. There was, you know, the students, they compete against each other trying to get the highest grade point average and whatnot. He said there was. He said when he was going to after school, he at Southwest, he said there was not even that issue. He said no one was trying to get the highest of anything. I had him transfer out to where Warren was going also. And because at that time, this is, once again, this is history. When they decided they were going to start busing. And in Detroit, in that part of Detroit, all they did was bus the children from South Detroit. They bus them over to across the bridge. And one thing about that was that at Mark Twain and Boynton, we had books, we had supplies where they sent our children to. They didn't have new books and carrying on. And so, we were told that the books that they did have, that when they bused the children from South Detroit, which is predominantly black area at that time, when they bused them to the school over there, I think it's called Montford or somewhere across the bridge there, they said that those people took those books and locked them up, okay? And that was the reason that I took my brother out of that school, because I said, well, you know, how are they going to do that? How are they going to take the books that's associated for the students and give them old books? You give a child an old textbook, some, you know, by the time the two school years go by, they're being changed material. So they're teaching you old material. And so that was the reason that I, at that time, disenrolled my brother and took him out of that district. So I'm not saying that because just because you move your child out of Detroit public schools into the suburbs or surrounding areas that they're gonna get a better education. What I can say that if you're not as a parent, if you're not on top of what your child is learning at either institution, then you're gonna be the one at fault if they fall behind. Because it's not magic. Just because you send your child to a suburban school does not mean that they're going to be successful, because you may find teachers that resent that. You have to have a personal relationship with teachers. Every year you should be up there to meet their teachers. When they say parent teacher conference, you should be the first one in line as a parent. You should be running to those parent teacher conference so you can meet each of these teachers and have a one-on-one eye contact experience with these teachers. Because sometimes when my children were going, they were in like the first grade, they were going to Chrysler Elementary, which was supposed to be one of the premier schools in Detroit. And because they were twins, they finally separated them in the first grade. Okay. So one of the twins in the morning, he would run. He'd be so happy to go into that. It's at school. The other would get out the car. He walked slowly. The closer he got to that door, his head would drop. And I'm thinking, well, wow, you know, I wonder what's going on. That concerned me. And I'm thinking, well, it can't be separation. It wasn't like the school was that big. Wasn't going to see his brother, you know, because some of the class they weren't together. And so when it kept on, you know, I would ask them every day, well, how was school? And one who was glad to go to school, he'd talk about his teacher, you know, how much fun it was. The other one would say nothing. He just shrugged his shoulders, you know. And I'm thinking, well, something's going on. He's not having a good time in school. So one day I did a drive-by. I went up there to the school, and I could hear this screaming and hollering when I walked in the door. You know, I checked in the office and I walked down there to the classroom, and she was just, and it was a Caucasian teacher. She was hollering at these first graders, hollering at them. And so, you know, I peeked in the room and I saw my son. He was sitting there, you know, he had his head down, hand on his chin, you know. And so when she exhaled and stopped hollering, I walked into the classroom and said, excuse me, and I walked in and walked to my son. I got, you know, stood down and I said, how you doing? And he shook his head, okay. And that teacher hollered at me, talking about, she literally said, I hope that he's not telling you that he's good because he is not. And I said, whoa, this is the devil right here. I immediately went to the principal. I said, let me tell you. I said, you either move my son out of this classroom or I'm going to the school board. I said, because that woman there, she doesn't want to teach these black children. I said, she hates these kids. And I said, you are not going to destroy my son's love for education. She's trying to make it so that he will hate education, so that he only wants to drop out because he couldn't learn it. If you can't learn in the first grade, what choice are you going to have later on? And after I moved him, because I asked this care teacher, she was saying, well, some children, they don't mature as other children and that. But it wasn't that. This lady, these kids were scared of her, and she was screaming at them. And so then the principal told me, the principal had nerve to tell me, she said, well, yes, we're aware of it, and we have sent her to not sensitivity, of course.
Sensitive
training? Something. They sent her to because of her attitude, you know. And when she said the principal told me, I'm rolling down my face because I'm thinking, you are allowing this white woman to abuse these precious black children. And all you teachers know it. And then teachers will come up to me later on. They said, well, we're so glad you got him out of there. And we've talked about it, but you know the union. You know. Yes. So you as a parent, you have to meet these teachers. If it's going to be a partnership between teachers and parents and principals, you have to be a part of that. You can't just send your children to the schools and not be aware. You got to work. I took notes for the parent teacher conferences. The once a month meetings for parents, teachers, and administrators. It's called an LSC at that time, so you could know what kind of programs they were going to be doing for the school and this and that. I would take notes and became the secretary for that, you know, so that when parents didn't make it to meetings, that they could follow with the minutes and follow what went on when they didn't attend. But, you just can't. You have to be very aware. You got to ask questions. Or what did you do today? What did you learn? You got to ask the questions. And you got to stop sending their children to school without finding out what's going on. So, I have other stories, but that was one of the worst things that happened while they were going to grade school was that woman. And they said, they said she was working on her master's degree. She didn't want to be in the classroom, but she had to do this for her degree. And it was just awful.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to send somebody who's teaching 6 years old to a sensitivity class. That sounded ridiculous to me.
Right. Wow. Well, like I said, I don't think much has really changed in that realm. I think that it is a difference, in public school and, the Catholic schools and suburban schools because, it shows that. The number shows it. And, and if you're around other kids that are learning, you know, you're going to do what they're doing. You're going to learn. You're going to pay attention. But if you're in a setting where nobody is learning, then nobody's going to learn. Okay? That's what I think. Let me see.
That's
I got
correct.
Miss Carly on the line. It's going to be our last one. And I just wanted her to share because she always put her grandchildren in private schools or schools. I don't know if they were outside of the city or inside the city, but they were able to, you know, have good grades, good grammar, good, you know, a good education. So you want to share with us, Miss Carly?
Yes. Hi, good evening. Thank you for this opportunity. I do have a couple setbacks on certain schools. Yes, my grandkids went to private. And, yes, there is a difference. And I was one of these persons always was engaged. And matter of fact, in Catholic, the parent has to be engaged in activities, fundraising. It's a lot. It's more, which the DPS, it's like setback. But I guess a lot of parents that send their kids to private school, they expect their kids to focus more or sit down and talk. Look, I'm spending money here. We not wasting it. So a lot of that has to do with it, which in public school, oh, yeah, taxpayers are paying for it, but they don't tell their kids or be engaged with the school, you know, or meeting their teacher. How they doing today? Go follow up. I heard this in school. There, my opinion, it is a difference. Then if you do have a student that is engaged in a non-private setting, it depends on their surrounding, how they was brought up in the family. So if you knew you had to do homework, this and that, I'm going to say they may get by not doing it. But it's a trail, that pattern they fall. So in my honest opinion, I mean, kids could get a good education in DPS. Two factors. Mm-hmm. The parent involved and be involved in school. You sit back like the other lady was saying, you're not going to get nothing accomplished. Then you come, why my kid have this? Why my kid? It just don't mean parents, teacher, conference time to start getting engaged. Because now they have this system where you can find out quarter, how they doing in school. Don't wait till that quarter is up and it's on the report card permanently. So, but in my opinion, yes, private setting, private school, it has a better outcome. DPS can have the same thing, too, if the parents is involved. And then I guess, you know, some teachers get fed up, you know, these kids won't learn this and that. But that's when the parents get involved, you know. A lot of distraction in the classroom. So the balance, the scale is not balanced. It's not balanced at all. Private school, I'm going to say, is weighing higher on it.
It's what
so, but I'm not in. Private school weigh much more than a non-private school.
Okay.
And then it actually depends on the individual, too, the child.
Yeah.
It depends.
Yeah.
But
like I
The learning is from home, not just at school. A lot of parents expect their kids to go to school and learn everything from school. No. Outside of the school, too. So if they don't continue that education, you know, out when they get home, even summer break, set all this computer and TV, tell the kid, pick up a book. Let's pretend we're in school. Then they wonder why the foreigners is much smarter because they go to school all year round. You know, just have the kids just keep educating themselves when school is out. A lot of kids lose brain senses just for 1 or 2 months. Then they get hard trying to go back to school and get back on track. Parents just could tell them, pick up a book, let's do some math. All you got to do is just put some math problems on a piece of paper, do it, and you're done for the day.
Okay, you know, we are going to go ahead, Ms. Combs.
That's about it, you know. Like I said, BTS, you know, I see they're trying to struggle on up there, but they still need some work. And I'm still not familiar because I didn't send my child to BTS school. It was always private. So, but by me going this far with the kids, I could see the difference.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do too. It's a big difference. Huge.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and thank you so much.
You've done a very good job with your kids, your grandkids, and that's just, you know, wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Try.
Yeah, we're going to continue this maybe next week because it's a lot. And then I had another educator that wanted to come on and speak about what she wanted to speak about as far as education. So we're going to do a part two with this because it's 9:06 o'clock. And Pastor, you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey. Okay, you got 2 minutes. Go on.
Hey,
one
real quick minute. Everything was awesome. Everybody was awesome. I love when they were talking about Write the Vision Down. That's from Habakkuk 2. And what was going on there is the prophet had made a complaint, too. This was his second complaint. And he said he was going to sit down and wait for God's answer. And then the Lord returned and said, write down the answer or write the vision down and make it plain so that the runner can go and give a correct message. And what that's saying to us is write the vision down and then put some action behind it. Write the vision down so that you get it clear, concise, you know what you're talking about, then the messenger can run and deliver a good message. So that's, you know, having it written down and putting some action behind it is everything. That's what James says. Don't just be a hearer, but a doer. Look to see what the word says. Continue in the word. Do what the word says. Then you'll be blessed in what you do. This should be goals. Everybody should have goals. They should be, and this could apply to a lot of different areas in your life. They can be short-term goals, mid-range goals, long-range goals. You can do that for your marriage. You can do that for your money. You can do that for a whole lot of things. But you should be goal-oriented. That way you're constantly reaching up. You're constantly reaching forward. Okay, and real-life stuff. Yes, teach them about real-life stuff. Especially when they're coming up to those years where they're about to graduate. How do you pay for a house? How do you pay for a car? How do you do all of these things? How do parents actually make the stuff happen? How do you keep lights and gas on? Yeah, you need to talk to them about that or you're going to be helping them pay for a lot of that. Okay? I was really impressed with the fifth grader and what he said about summer break. No, this is not just a time to get out of school and go play until we go back. No, we can play a little bit, but we also need to get prepared for the next grade we're going to. See, that's goal orientation right there, and that keeps you moving forward. It gives you something to live for. And I love it that the young man said he wants to get into science. I love science. Neil deGrasse Tyson, even though he maybe not be a Christian, okay, I'm amazed at what God has allowed him to know about this universe, okay? And when I want to know something about God's creation, I go to the scientists because that's all they do is figure out how God made it, what it's supposed to do, how it works, and God allows them to know certain things for our benefit. So that's an awesome field to go off into, okay? And who's responsible? Of course, the children ultimately are responsible for doing the best they can. But the teacher is also responsible for doing the best they can. As a teacher, a Bible teacher, I like to kind of include myself in being responsible for how they, you know, ultimately I can't make them learn. I can't make them do homework. But I can make sure that I give them something that they can work with, that they can take and run with the rest of the way. So, yes, ultimately it is the student's responsibility to learn. That you can't change that. But the teacher bears a responsibility to do the best they can to facilitate them. And I love how it was brought out that each student is different. You have to find out where they are. And that's what I do at church. I find out where the members mm-hmm. are, and they walk with Jesus, and then start teaching them from that point, you know, to where they, you know, just learn to live it out in the rest of their life, right? And then train up a child in the way they should go. And it doesn't just mean Bible training. It means Jesus had to be trained up how to take over his father's business. He didn't know his father Joseph was going to pass away, okay, stepfather or whatever. He didn't know that he was going to pass away, but because Joseph had not only trained him up in the scriptures, but he also trained him up in the, how to be a carpenter. And so when he was older, he was able to get into the business and teach it to his younger brothers because they still had to support themselves, even though Joseph was gone. And finally, race. Amen. Restate the question. Answer the question. Mm-hmm. Cite where you got the answer from. And then explain, amen, your answer. Oh, wow. That was awesome right there. So that's what I got for today, and I want to thank everybody who came on and spoke because they imparted something to me that's going to help me be a better pastor.
All right. Great show. Great information. All you guys come back next week, same time. We're going to talk about this some more. We're going to have some more callers come on, educators come on and roundtable this and just see where it is that we can go and what kind of solution we're going to have at the end of this, end of the next conversation, okay? I love everything I heard. Thank you, Pastor O. You are always dynamite. Awesome.
<You're>
Thank you, Jackie Vandergriff. Thank you, Jackie Conley. Thank you, June and Terrence and Neatly Clyburn, Sarah. Thank you. Thank everybody. Thank you, Miss Carly, for having some great grandkids that you have really invested in. That was an investment. She gave them what they needed to make it, and we won't have to worry about them later. We won't. We won't, because we're going to keep praying for them. And Jamariah and Jimison, oh, those are going to be some doctors, or either scientists, next president, something. And I can't wait to see where they go. That's going to be great. Okay, so just thank everybody for participating. This was great. It was good, and it really motivated me to do something more for these hard-headed kids on my block. Ooh-wee. Yeah. So, yeah, that really motivated me, and I'm going to chase them down in a few minutes, and it's going to be... You're going to be doing a vision board or something like that, you know. So, yeah. Okay, well, thank you, everybody, and just have a blessed rest of the day. You done, Pastor O? You got anything else you want to shout out or anybody shout out?
Uh-huh. I'm good. Mm-hmm. That vision board and that writing it down and then planning your future and then working at that, that gives your life meaning, and it gives your life purpose, and you know where you're going.
Right.
Every day you know
it.
What you're doing. Somebody says, what are you doing? I'm working on my short-range goals to become this. My mid-ranges. I'm in my long ranges. You know, your life is ever progressing forward. I like that.
Yeah, me too. I just, you know, because I work with these kids in these programs, and, man, they're just so behind. Some of them are just, like, in there that's really, really smart, you know, and some of them have just missed out on life here, and they just got a lot of violence in themselves just, you know, going on, and you know, it's just like, what happened in the beginning? And so wow, yeah, we need a lot of work, because those same ones that, you know, are there are going to be the ones that's going to be out here what is that, if we don't help our youth now, we're going to be victims of not helping later. So we got to, what they say, stop the bleeding somewhere, and really
dig into this and try to get our kids to paying attention and being responsible for their learning. And what was that Nisi was saying about Lauren saying that he wasn't being challenged and everybody was trying to compete against one another, and I like that. And so the kids should be competing against one another. Because I always ask them, I say, are you the smartest in your class? You know, and they'd be like, well, no, or well, I'm trying, or well, yeah, you know, well, be the smartest, you know. So, yeah, they have to have something and something to compete with. But if you have a lot of misbehaving and bad behavior and nobody's reading, then everybody's going to be doing that. If he ain't reading, I'm not going to read. He not doing his work, I'm not going to do my work. So that looks like what's going on. Because if nobody, once you're around people that's learning, you want to learn. Yeah, if you're in a library and everybody learning, then you learning. But because, and if you're not, you know, if you're in the classroom and nobody's learning, then that's what it's going to be. And I think that's what we're seeing here. So we're going to have a solution for that. Okay, that's it. That's it, and that's all. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful evening. Whitney Houston.
I believe the children are future. Well, let them lead.
Let them lead.
Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense, a pride. Make it easier. Let the children laugh. Remind us how we used to be. Everybody. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my needs.